Johnson on saxophone, opening up on Minor Blues. It's from his 1964 album, Proof Positive. This is Lead Stories. I'm your Trace Lead. And we enter the fifth day in Minneapolis of tensions between the community and the police there, having to do with the shooting death of Jamar Clark. It was very, very tense yesterday, and it continues today. And we will get a report now from David Shannon, who reported on the most recent development in this case for the Star Tribune. David, thank you so much for being with us today. David, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, thank you for being with us. Well, today is day five of tensions in Minneapolis. Tell us why.
Early Sunday morning, there was a police-involved shooting of a young black man. Police are saying that he was resisting arrest after trying to help his girlfriend who was being taken away in an ambulance. Community people and witnesses, they're saying that he was down on the ground, he was in handcuffs, and one of the officers stood over him and shot him in the head. So there's been, within hours, there's been protests and gatherings, and I just finished a news conference that they just held and had some very interesting things to say.
Could you tell us what those interesting things were?
Yes. The head of the local, of the Minneapolis chapter of the NAACP, she talked for about a half hour. The main points are their demands. They want the release of the videotapes. They want federal receivership for the police department. The big news that came out was the national president of the NAACP is coming to Minneapolis tonight. Their head of their youth and college division was here who spoke. They're concerned. They want to observe. They're having a candlelight vigil tomorrow night. So this incident is really just not gaining local concern, but nationally as well, including U.S. senators from Minnesota. They're voicing their concerns. City council members were standing in unison with protesters in front of the police precinct. So I've covered crime for a long time, and I've never quite seen the actions and kind of gyrations that have happened in this particular case.
Well, I want to draw a bit on that experience of covering crime in Minneapolis for some time, and yet this particular case seems a bit more jarring than the cases you have covered before. Mm-hmm. What about it? What about the circumstances strike you as being unusual, even in, for the years that you've been covering this,
right,
this particular sector?
That's an excellent question, and I've kind of been racking my brain myself to try and figure this out. In fact, I'm working with another reporter on a story for the weekend about race relations over, you know, the last decade or so, and, you know, why this. The allegations itself, obviously, somebody in handcuffs being, you know, as they say, executed, you know, that's a jarring image. I think social media obviously plays a big role because you can gather the masses and get your message out so easily and widespread. So that certainly has an impact. Also, there's a lot of empowerment with the local activists because of Ferguson, Baltimore, New York City, and officers being charged. You know, that hasn't happened for years and years, never in Minneapolis. In the 20-plus years I've worked at the paper, there's never been an officer indicted in a shooting, which is one of the concerns they raise, that they want the county attorney to not take this case to a grand jury, which meets secret and never indicts. They want the county attorney's office to directly prosecute this case.
Just yesterday, and according to the report you filed, the names of the officers were released, and we had also an immediate reaction by the police chief, Janet Hartaux, who basically began to show signs that the police were anticipating a very, very animated reaction in the community and were beginning to mobilize themselves to maintain, quote, order, unquote, right, in anticipation of this vigorous protest. What became of that? What is the feeling? Why was it anticipated that releasing the officers' names would cause such a reaction, as well as releasing the tape of the tragedy?
I don't know if the names themselves, I mean, it obviously gives people an opportunity to do, you know, their own research and, you know, get their own opinions about these officers. We obviously, in the time we had, did as much background checking as we could on them. So I'm not sure if the names themselves, I think it was just another important piece of the process to get those names out there so people knew their level of experience. People now are speculating on their race, if that had anything to do with it. I think obviously nobody's ever camped out in front of a police precinct before. This is also a new technique to kind of have an occupy the precinct. So that's probably another reason why this is gaining footage outside of the Twin Cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul. I give the chief credit, quite frankly, for letting them do this. They could have booted them a long time ago. Obviously, there was tension last night when they tried to, they were blocking the entrance to the precinct. Officers were concerned about their safety because things have been thrown at them, rocks and bottles. So there was some tension there, and now that pathway is clear, but they're not moving anybody off the property. So I give her credit for that. You know, there was speculation last night that they were even going to call in the National Guard. So, you know, things get ratcheted up so quickly now. I mean, you got to knock them down if they're not true.
Well, we have indications, again, according to your report, that the FBI is beginning an inquiry into this.
Yes.
Was this triggered? I mean, was this a typical or a pro forma thing of just saying, well, we'll start an inquiry? Or was this as a result of previous actions across the United States that encouraged a swift response of this type by the FBI?
Yep, it was definitely the latter. Never can I recall that the FBI, I mean, there's always demands for it, in these instances, but rarely is it undertaken. So I think you're absolutely right that incidents across the country, they're going to make sure that they cover their bases, and quite frankly, I think they should. You know, there's so many parallels. There's the criminal investigation. There should be a civil rights look with, you know, outside eyes. And I'm sure internally, at some point, the Minneapolis Police Department will have to do their own investigation of their officers to make sure that they didn't violate policy or procedures. So there, yeah, there's many tracks, but these, like you did say, the FBI investigation is just very unusual for these cases.
Having covered this as your beat for many years, what would you say is the what is your feeling about the relationship between the police and the community in Minneapolis?
It's always been tense. I mean, that's just the way it's always going to be. These issues haven't changed radically over the years. 13 years ago, there was a riot in North Minneapolis, not far from the police precinct that I was covering. It was, again, there had been racial tensions rising. A police officer, they did a raid in a house that was kind of a well-known drug house. The family living there, they released their pit bull. Police shot at it. A young boy was struck in the arm by the bullet, and the mom came running out of the house, you know, screaming that the police had killed her child. And this wasn't the case, but it was a warm August night. Many people started to gather. It really started getting out of control. And as I was walking to my car to leave, I got attacked by five people and was pretty badly injured. A broken elbow, broken nose, bruised kidneys. So, you know, I kind of I have empathy for what they're going through, but unfortunately, I just haven't seen dramatic change in the relationship. You know, there's two sides to every story, but I think the level of tension hasn't subsided or, you know, hasn't been greatly increased. I think it's just, it's always bubbling, and then something like this happens, and of course, all hell breaks loose.
In the hell breaking loose, we have two entirely different versions of what actually happened here, including
exactly.
From the police chief and from the head of the police union. The president of the police union has given an entirely different scenario as to how the Jamar Clark ended up dead, shot dead.
Right.
Have you done any investigation so far into this? This is a fresh situation, but have you done any inquiries into this situation to lead you to believe one side or the other, or that the facts as they are different from whichever side is claiming?
Mm-hmm. You know, I've got to be down the middle. I don't have a gut feeling one way or another. Each side will give them their voice. You know, we'll have to wait like everybody else, you know, 2 months, whenever down the line.
Essentially what I was asking is, have you yet been able to mount your own independent investigation to see what the facts are? Have you been able to do that yet, or are you about to do that now?
We're doing that, but again, it's hard, obviously, to get information. I feel I'm fairly well-sourced, so I'm getting probably more information than other people in the media might be getting. But again, I've got to be careful, like everybody else. You know, I can't say one way or the other. Pure speculation on my part, and I will hopefully not get in trouble for saying it, but I just I find it very hard to believe that an officer would literally shoot somebody in the head who was in handcuffs. Now, you look around the country, and I wouldn't have believed those incidents could have happened either. So I, you know, you can't ever say no way. So yeah, we are doing, you know, we've got 4 or 5 reporters digging away at this. So yeah, we're trying to do as much of our own investigation as possible.
And finally, I know you're on deadline here, but what is expected tonight, or as the day progresses, what is the climate like, and what is being expected in terms of community reaction?
I think right now it's pretty low-key. This news conference was important for a variety of reasons, just so they could continue to get their demands out, but also announcing that, you know, the national NAACP is going to have boots on the ground, you know, as of tonight, and, you know, announcing their rally tomorrow. So I think tonight will, who knows? I mean, every hour I'm waiting for something to happen, but I'm guessing it'll remain quiet. You know, there's a couple dozen people here that are camped out, but, you know, come after work or whatever, there could be a gathering. You know, the police have already done their shifting of protesters around the precinct, so that won't be an issue tonight unless, you know, they're trying to take some action to bust through a few barricades, which would seem kind of senseless at this point. So I expect nothing too dramatic. It's getting cold here, very cold. The weather has changed dramatically in just the last 24 hours, and there will maybe be snow in the next day. So will weather be a factor? Who knows? They're asking people to drop off food and gloves and hats and everything. So, you know, as of right now, I'm thinking they want to remain peaceful, and it should hopefully be a relatively quiet night.
Thanks, David Shannon, for joining us today and giving us this update on a case that continues to concern the community in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Thanks so much.
Thank you, and feel free to call me again.
Thank you. Well, it is not an unusual story to those of us listening to this program and those of us who have been in tune with the country's sad and sorry history of confrontations between law enforcement and African and American and Latino communities in particular, and the horrific outcomes that we suffer. And we suffer these outcomes because apparently, and if you take a statistical look, you will see that chances are, more often than not, these cases proceed along a predictable path. The road to justice is very, very, very slow. And even when, in the rare instances that we find that there is to be a prosecution, and that's a rare instance, we find that in that scenario as well, there are obstacles to justice. Just today, I read a story filed by, let's see, the author's name here. I'll get it in a minute. But what he's saying is that in a case in Chicago, the process was impeded, the process of justice was impeded by the system. And this is not news. This is not news at all. We had a sick, young black male, 17-year-old Laquan McDonald, and police in Chicago asserted that he was armed with a knife. He wasn't using it, at the time, but he was carrying a knife on the southwest side of the city on October the 20th last year. And they attempted to detain him, and supposedly he made a move to get the police at his advantage, and he was shot and killed. Hit 16 times, and then the autopsy is showing that what the police were contending in this case simply did not hold up. Today, in Cook County, a judge decides whether a dash cam video that showed the death, the shooting death of Laquan McDonald, should be released. And there's now a big wrangling, legal wrangling, over whether the footage should be made public. The claim, of course, is that on the part of the police, is that it will incite riots. It will cause the community to go haywire. And on the community side, they said, well, it is just one of those things that we need. We need to know the truth. And what is the fear of knowing the truth, especially since dash cams are required? And therefore, the community, the public, is entitled to see what went on there. But you see, when you have a system that understands that its first order of business is to represent the interests of the ruling elite, and when it is conditioned to do so and reinforced in doing so with the idea that the people it polices, certain segments of that population, should be viewed as discardable. They're not really very important. You can behave however you wish to behave. Hence, we have law enforcement in those communities. Other communities get policing. Those other communities are assured that the police are not an invasion force. They're there to protect, to serve, in order to guarantee safety and life and property and all the good things that we hear about with police. In other communities, they're regarded as bacteria, and their communities are petri dishes that breed bacteria. So the job of police is to contain bacteria so as to prevent any kind of further infection. See? Two entirely different views. So the road to justice is very slow, predictably slow, because the police really are symbols of the mindset, the philosophy, and the authority and power of the state, of the system. And that is the standing order, to preserve that at all costs. So the attitude is, whatever they do, especially in these communities that have no claim to humanity at all, they can't possibly be human beings. Whatever they do, you have to find a way to cover it up, excuse it. You have a way, have to find a way to defend it, to ignore it even. I want to remind you of a case. It was so outrageous. It occurred in about 4 years ago in Miami. The case of a young Haitian man, 22 years old, Raymond Eris. And he was coming from a hip-hop concert. He was driving away, as a matter of fact. The concert was over in the South Beach area. And he was driving away, and on his way home, at least that was his intention. He lived a bit north in South Florida. The police claimed that he was driving at a high rate of speed, as he drove from the venue. Witnesses said that was impossible because the streets at the time he was leaving the venue, the streets were just flooded with people who had just come from the concert and are leaving the venue as well. So the claim of him driving at this high rate of speed just could not possibly hold up. It just was not true. The people who were there were surprised that anybody could claim that anyone would be driving away from the venue at a high rate of speed, because the traffic, the foot traffic on the sidewalks, and it spilled even into the street, was so thick. Here is a recording of one of the people who was on the street that night when this event occurred. Here's what he recorded.
They done killed this man, oh my God. They done killed this man. Oh my God, he got to be dead now. He dead, he dead now. If that ain't dead, he dead now. If that ain't dead, he dead now, bro. If that ain't dead, he dead. Just kick this man. Oh my God. These done killed this man. This is dead. He is dead.
That was a recording that sustained noise you heard, the rat-a-tat-a-tat-a-tat sound that you heard, was a sound of 116 bullets fired at this young man, who was seated behind the wheel of his car, who was unarmed, who had no intention, even, of doing harm to anyone. 116 bullets fired by as many as a dozen police officers. Now, four bystanders also were wounded, and we had this huge crowd that witnessed this incredible killing. They were there. They saw everything that happened. And this was 4 years ago, in August, 4 years ago. And to this day, we have no accounting as to what happened there. We have no accounting at all. No public accounting, no results of any investigation that happened here. 116 bullets fired at one individual. Nobody has been indicted. We don't know about any intention of seeking indictments. 4 years. And not even the results of where this case went to base one. The officers are still around. They're still collecting their paychecks. Nobody's been fired. There's been no great reaction from the NAACP, and Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton haven't shown up. And the life of Raymond Harris is a distant memory. And this, too, is what we are accustomed to. We hear this all the time. How often on this program have you heard about cases in which there is someone who is dead by rather contentious and mysterious circumstances? There are great concerns about it. And the attitude is, well, you know, we'll investigate. At least that's the one thing they do say uniformly. We are investigating. 4 years, 116 bullets. One would think that it's about time that we get to know some of the basics of this case. Considering the officers are doing quite well, they're still collecting their paychecks. And we have a young Haitian man who's dead, and his family to this day, 4 years later, in what could only be described as a public execution. His family still has no answers about what happened to their son and brother. And this is typical. Now people want to know, how come communities get really riled up when things like this happen and they burst into fits of anger? Sometimes these are the reasons. The community, by extension, is treated with such disregard, such disrespect. And the system itself feels no obligation. It doesn't even feel threatened in the remotest sense to at least try to approximate something of a good faith effort to investigate the cops. They don't even try to do it. It's in your face. We are handling this the way we want to. It may or may not suit you, but that's your tough luck. And you're just going to have to deal with the way we are doing things. Or, more importantly, the way we are not doing things. Now, I ask you, is it unreasonable that after 116 bullets are fired, including injuring passersby, bystanders, people just trying to go to their homes after a concert, you would think that this would constitute a major, major investigation? You would think that this would be a high priority item. And for all kinds of reasons, there is a vested interest in getting this matter looked at, thoroughly investigated, and with incredible speed, so that we have a timely response to something so outrageous, outrageously violent. But here we are, 4 years later. And this is not the only such case. You know, it is a very dramatic case, but the whole experience of police officers routinely doing the most egregious things and continuing to be on the force, continuing to get their paychecks, and life goes on, and the system protects them and makes, in this case, it makes no apologies for it. It simply says, we are investigating, and you know, it takes time. These things take time, so you just hurry up and wait. And then they worry and wonder why people become very, very, very animated and annoyed. I don't think it's unreasonable to expect by now a clear accounting, in this case, and legal action against the police officers involved. I don't think that's unreasonable. But look at the utter failure, and look at the ways in which the system agrees with itself. And that includes local representatives. One of the largest Haitian communities outside of Haiti is in South Florida. The other is in New York. Where are the representatives on this? Where's the police department? Where's the justice department that so loves the idea of justice? Where are all these things? Where are all these people? Where are the systems that assure justice? I say, he's just a Haitian guy. No big deal. We just keep moving. And this is my point. I will be following this case, and I will tell you that so far I have made contact with the state prosecutor's office requesting all of the files associated with this case, and I've gotten nowhere so far. But that's so far. We just will continue until we get some answers about what happened to Raymond Harris. Why was he publicly executed? And why do we have a police department with employees, tax-paid employees, who felt perfectly within their authority to fire 116 shots at an individual under rather specious and contentious circumstances, and who to this day have not been made to account for their actions? And we will ask those people who are responsible for compelling them to explain their actions and to account for their actions, why they haven't done what they are supposed to have done by now. We'll take this break and come back to some other outrageous stuff right after this. Listening to Lead Stories on PRN.FM. I'm Eutrice Lead. Well, the Republicans have had 4 of them and the Democrats 2. What am I referring to, of course, is the great super hyped Q&A sessions that I refuse to call debates that were hosted by various media entities. And the question is, 6 debates. But what really are they talking about that matters? That's what you're going to be answering. That's the question I'm posing to you. What are they talking about that matters to you? Or what should they be talking about that matters to you? 888-874-4888 is the number to call. Let's get that on the table a bit and take a look at it, because you know these are now events. These are not debates. These are events. We talked about the link between these events and the thirst by the various media entities hosting these Q&A sessions, the thirst for hundreds of millions of dollars in campaign ad money, and so they are taking their turns trying to prove the efficiency of the buy. If you give us the money, here's what we can produce. We can reach people. We can get you closer to your constituency. We can tell your message. Just give us a huge chunk of of that money, as much as $5 billion up for claim in this round of the presidential race. And we are seeing these debates, and supposedly that means democracy is alive and well, and the people's right to know is assured because of these incredible sessions that open our eyes to the workings of government and the true meaning of democracy. Yeah, okay. You want to fall for that? Good for you. I already told you my position on these things. But I'm interested. So far, if you've managed to torture yourself long enough to even listen to any of this stuff, to watch it, what are they talking about that you think matters in the scheme of things to us, the people? What is it that you think that they're trying to communicate? Are you learning, or have you learned of anything substantive yet that falls within your realm of importance? Are they talking to you? Are you listening for, you know, buzzwords that would seem to indicate that they're even remotely connected to your real world and the things that matter to you? Because we're going to have some more of this stuff thrown at us, and the case being made by a really disingenuous media that they're doing the job of educating the public about the issues that are important to our understanding of our interests as citizens, as voters, as people who should be intimately involved in politics and the future of our country and all those noble ideals. Are we getting any of that? Are you feeling it? Are you feeling it yet? That's the question. 888-874-4888. I also invite you to comment, if you will, on the previous segment. And we're talking about these police cases that continue to hound us, and the direction of these cases, what we see, the disturbing pattern, the slow, slow path to justice, if we get it at all. And why is that the predictable path that these cases are going through? Why is it that we can't be assured that when something happens, and police are involved, that we as the people can be reasonably assured of an even-handed handling of these things? But why is it that it's so consistently one-sided, and the system galvanizes itself against justice, against really taking solid action in the interest of justice? What is happening, and why is it happening? That's the question. So, two questions on the board. You can address yourself to either one or both if you wish, but let's hear from you at 888-874-4888. I was trying to remember, I wrote the name of the reporter down. He was to join us today, but couldn't because of a late schedule and something he's covering. But I hope soon that we will be able to have him with us, and he can explain this case to us when he comes aboard. So I'll follow up with that today and see if we can book him. Tomorrow, as you know, is Free Your Mind Friday on Lead Stories. We have lots to talk about, I'm sure, tomorrow. So I'm looking for your usual high gear commentaries tomorrow. All right. We have no callers at the moment, so I will continue. Why do we engage in these kinds of discussions? It's very important because sometimes we lose focus, and we think that it's, you know, it's the case that is important. And yes, in the immediate situation, you do pay attention to the facts of a particular case. But We discuss them as a way of getting you to see the links. Because each case represents a link in a long chain that takes us back to the basic issue, which is, what is the nature of the relationship, the power equation between these communities that are directly affected and the power structure? That's where we are going when we look at these cases. It's not just to say, here's what this case is about and here's what that case is about, and we deal with this on a case-by-case basis. Each of these things, in the end, is a link in a chain. From New York, Beverly, you're on the air.
I'd just like to make a brief comment, because I really don't want to get upset about this. But I had a discussion in this regard with my neighbors about a week ago. And I pointed out to them that unless we're willing to withhold our financial support of the system, nothing will change. And we laid out a whole list of things that we could do for each other as opposed to making purchases for each other. And I think if more people just jumped on that bandwagon, we wouldn't even have to fight. They would come to us and ask us, what is the problem? How can we serve you better?
Thank you, Beverly. Thanks for your call. From South Carolina, Khalil, you're on the air.
Hi, and hello everyone in the PRN family.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, on the two topics, first of all, the tragedy. it's so sad, because if you don't even mention the name or the date, you can just go back in history, I don't know, 150 years, maybe even more, you know, when things like this were recorded. It just seems to be the strategy where when police fire on a citizen and it looks bad for the police, well, all they do is bury it and hope people will forget, which they often do, and things move on. And that's why I said it just seems like this is the same old, nothing changes. And I think it's really not going to change until mainstream society accepts the fact that law enforcement, like it or not, if you talk to a sociologist, a credible one, they are a gang. And until we understand the gang, the dynamics of a gang, which academics understand that, but that's what makes it so hard to change, is that law enforcement is a gang. They're a family. And it's hard to tell on your family member. It's difficult. And it makes their job dangerous, the good cops, when they see what the bad cops are doing. And I think that's a large part of the problem. That's why it does have to do with race, but it doesn't. And, you know, a lot of that is depending on what part of the country you're in. So that's just one thing. And I would encourage anyone who's listening, who's a sociology or a criminology professor, please comment on that, because I just remember what I learned in school. And as to these debates, I think that this is part, what we're seeing with these debates, both Republican and Democrat, is that it's a symptom of this buffoonery now of what we call our political system. It's just plain buffoonery. Anytime that we can accept the fact that Ben Carson, Donald Trump, people like that are actually in the contention to be president of the United States, that should make everyone just stop and pause and say, okay, this is really a joke. Now, please present the real candidates. Now, as to what we're learning, we're not learning anything, because people will have forgotten how the system works. Really, a president can just make suggestions. So, I mean, they could present issues that they would like to put forward that Congress will hopefully pass if they are on board with the president. If not, we get what we have now. We have a broken system. And you sound well, Eutrice.
Thank you.
Thank you for putting up with me.
Thank you so much for your contribution today. Well, that brings us to the end of our program. And it's all about keeping our minds wired on the reality, what we are experiencing. Most of us, this is the reality. what we are observing in terms of how the system is working itself to galvanize its authority and power, to fashion an unreality that in turn is being sold to us as reality. We have to always keep in mind that it serves their purpose. And in order to serve their purpose, the truth is the first casualty. You more than likely will not be told the truth. But we do have, and Khalil and Beverly both alluded to this, we do have a responsibility, however, to wire ourselves or to get wired into our reality, because we can ill afford to join them in their plan, which is really annihilation. They just create a world that just does not exist, and they install you as permanent residents there. We always have to remember that the best weapon we have, and in some cases the only weapon we have for continued survival, is our minds. And if we lose that, then we have lost the battle entirely. Thank you so much for being with me today, and I hope you will be with me again tomorrow. Coming up next, Expanding Mind with Eric Davis. You can reach me at leadstories@gmail.com, and as always, a pleasure and a great privilege to be in your esteemed company. Bye-bye.